Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Jays Talk Plus. You're listening on the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. Show Ali Julia Kreutz with you for the next few hours. Over those next couple of hours, we'll be joined by a whole cohort of Julia's colleagues today. Keegan Matheson, Manny Randhawa, Kennedy Landry, all from MLB.com. They'll stop by. We'll take a look back at the All-Star festivities. Certainly look ahead to the second half, which I guess starts tomorrow, Jules. And don't forget, everyone, we're going to put a bow on the first half of the season today. Tomorrow we'll do bold predictions, but today, first half awards. So if you want to text us 590-590, name and location, you are certainly free to do so. The People's Text line is always open. As you know, standard data and messaging rates may apply. We'll read those towards the end of the show. Jules, you got your picks ready?
Sure do. I just got to say, show, that I can only imagine that our producer, Amit Mon, did not mention my name when he was booking our guests, because there's no way three co-workers would have agreed to this if they knew that I was here.
Well, you know what? Let's find out. Let's bring in Keegan Matheson, Blue Jays beat writer from MLB.com. Did Amit actually ask you, Keegan, or did he let you know that Jules was in fact co-hosting the show?
Yeah, Julia reached out directly. Okay, right. It was okay. A little emotional, said, "I miss you. It's been 4 days since I last saw you at work. This is the longest we've gone without speaking, et cetera, et cetera." Yeah. There was a link to some sort of power ballad in there. But you know what? I'm happy to be here, though. I feel like this is a good reason for me to, you know, cut my hair, clean up the beard. Very quickly, guys, I got into off-season mode.
Oh, yeah.
Over the break. Like, it took me about 3 days to look like a caveman, which I realize I'm not far from on the best of days, but... man, I got that little taste of life without baseball, and it was delicious. Yeah. For a few days. But we're back, and apparently there's first half awards. I mean, I'm interested to see who wins anything from you guys later. This is great.
Seriously, yeah, it was tougher this year, right, Cho? Yes. than it was last year. But we're good at finding the positives, somewhat overly so.
I'm told, maybe, Keegan, that I am maybe too positive sometimes. Oh. Maybe I look for the silver. Hey. I'm like the king of moral victories on Jay's Talk. So maybe that's not always a great thing, but I feel like for this particular exercise, it might be.
I'm here to balance you out. When I met Julia, she was quite positive as well. And look at her now. So
that's fair.
I will, I'll be happy to cast a cloud.
Well, first of all, what did you get up to during All-Star Week? Did you, I know you didn't go to Texas, but did you experience Texas-like weather here in Toronto? It's been kind of wild here.
Yeah, I did. Thankfully, we did not send me to Texas. That would not have been good for anybody. Good for Shai Davidia and yes. Hazel May. I was not there as well. They would not have dealt well with me in that Texas heat. A little bit of relaxation, a lot of covering the MLB draft from home,
all
which
right.
is exciting on night one when it's on TV. A little less exciting on days two and three when you are sitting in front of your computer listening to names be read out and you, along with everyone else, are Googling them and trying to figure out who the heck these guys are. But a lot of that, a bit of a reset, bought groceries, incredible experience for me. Just got my life back in order. You know, it doesn't often happen during the season. So kind of hit reset a little bit.
Well, Keegan, speaking of the draft then, because you covered it so extensively and so well for us at MLB.com, wondering what your impressions were just with the draft class of the Blue Jays. It seems like they followed kind of a known blueprint, something that they've done before, leaning a little bit more college. But overall, how does this draft class sort of fit into what the organization has been trying to build and the strategy for the years ahead?
I think it fits in with a lot of the recent draft classes. And we're seeing that now that you've seen this draft group in place for a few years, just like the front office with Ross Atkins and Mark Shapiro over 8-9 years, you can start to see trends. The types of players they like, the types of players they don't like, the risks they like to take. And you saw that in the first round. Trey Yesavage, I think, is a very good first-round pick. Now, where it goes from here, we'll talk in 3 years. We'll see. We all know how the MLB draft works. But that is a pick you've got to be very happy with. Right off the top, getting Trey Yesavage on MLB Pipeline, he was our number 11. You get him at 20, you call it a win for today, and you check in a few years from now. But then the Blue Jays also like to take their high school picks and kind of have these treats sprinkled in through the draft where you're taking a bit of a risk. Now, we've seen that in the last couple of years higher up with Arjun Namala, Brandon Barriera. This year, Johnny King in the third, these high schoolers who the Blue Jays think they can develop. Now, a lot of teams skew a little further to that side, chasing a bit more upside. I'd consider the Blue Jays maybe more towards the middle, the conservative side of draft risk that they like to take on. But if you're going to have a big, fancy, shiny new complex that costs $100 and some million, you want to get the most out of it. And the best way to get the most out of it is having those 17 and 18-year-old draft kids, just like the 16-year-old international signings coming in, have them in there from day one when they are still growing as human beings, let alone baseball players. So a few of those mixed in, but I like the first rounder very much. And you've got to take some risks. If you're going to be conservative, you need some risks, because the Blue Jays don't just need players. Like, they need stars eventually. They need the next Vladdy, the next Bo. You got to find that soon.
And I find the MLB draft discussion so interesting, Keegan, because, and it's something Jules and I have spoken about over the last couple of days, but simply that, you know, you don't, I mean, and I know we all know that drafts are different across the four sports, but you don't really draft for need necessarily in Major League Baseball, right? Like, you're drafting, like you're saying, like, for with an eye towards years down the road. And, you know, you draft a quarterback in the top five in the NFL. Typically that guy plays at some point in the season, right? You draft a center or a forward or something in the NBA draft in the top 10, that guy's going to play a lot of minutes for you, right? So it's not quite the same in Major League Baseball, where these guys, the lead time on them are typically like years. It's not even like a matter of months, right? It's years we're talking about. But at the same time, I thought it was interesting that the Jays decided to go so heavy on pitchers, right? And maybe that's just to help replenish the farm system a little bit. I know it's been a little depleted, as we've discussed, but I thought that was an interesting choice, because while, again, you don't draft for need, they clearly had that in the back of their mind when they were making these picks.
Yeah, and they've skewed that way a bit in recent drafts when you compare it to prior to 2020, right, which kind of works as a cutoff point. That was only five rounds. It was a strange draft. They've gone much heavier on pitchers since then, almost twice as heavy. And you can make some sort of discrepancy between at least pitchers and position players. That's enough to work with. And the Blue Jays need to develop some pitching, and they need to do it quickly. Chris Bassitt has 1 year left. Yusei Kikuchi might have 1 week left. Alek Manoah, we don't know who he's going to be coming back. Gausman has two left, but Rios has that opt-out after two. No team has a rotation set in stone for 7 years, but the Blue Jays could really, my God, really benefit from having some young starting pitchers who at least are depth, are at least a number 6, 7, 8, 9. Because again, this year, guys, they don't have that. They didn't last year either. They didn't the year before. And this organization has been very lucky, part luck, part health due to the starters and the medical staff, credit to them. But a lot of it being very lucky that they have not had to go to their 8, 9, 10 guys, like a lot of organizations do. So the Blue Jays need to develop some of that, and they need to keep these guys healthy, because look through this system this year. Ricky Tiedemann is hurt right now. Brandon Barriera is done for the year. Landon Marudis, who was the best story of these pitchers early on, he's done for the year. Adam Macko, Kendry Rojas have all been on the IL. These are all of their top pitching prospects. Now, pitching prospects nowadays, Tiedemann being a great example, are pushing what the human body is capable of. We're way past what the human body was meant to do. Now we're pushing what the human body is even capable of doing from a physical standpoint. Pitchers are going to break down, especially when you're trying to throw 100. So you need to have 100 pitchers. That's the only way to go about this, is a quantity approach. Yeah, you got to develop them, but you've got to have a ton of these guys and hope that of that quantity, you can find that next development success story like a Tiedemann.
Keegan, to piggyback off of that and talk a little bit about the trade deadline, the Blue Jays seem to have an opportunity to perhaps add a little bit of depth in that sense. I don't know necessarily, you know, with the strategy that we're hearing more and more that the Blue Jays are trying to pursue here, it seems like they're going to hold tight to guys like Vladdy and Bo and sell the unrestricted free agents. But, you know, looking at where the farm system is and the depth or the inexistent depth right now on that front, what opportunities can the trade deadline sort of present for the Blue Jays here as they try to build towards not only, you know, the distant future, but the midterm as well?
Yeah, this farm system was ranked, what, number 24, I think, by our MLB pipeline people who know these other systems a million times better than I ever will. And has much changed to make it better than 24? I don't think so. So you can probably still consider it safely a bottom 10 farm system right now in baseball. When I look at this deadline, my first thought is, how do they get an actual impactful prospect? I'm not talking about a 17-year-old who maybe turns into something or maybe plays two more years of pro ball and then never again. I'm talking about a legitimate prospect, some other organization's version of the Bargers, Jimenez's, Horwitz's coming up, who are right there at AAA or ready to make an impact soon. That's going to be tough. You say Kikuchi is your best crack at that. He's got to look good these next couple of outings. Jimmy Garcia is another crack at that, but are you going to get someone who is legitimate and close to the big leagues? That's tough. Once you get down into the Kiermaier, Turner, Trevor Richards realm, I don't think you're talking about those impact right now prospects, but for the Blue Jays to actually add top 30 guys, top 20 guys in their own system, they're still kind of on that line right now. When you look back through recent years, even Danny Jansen being an example of what these rental starters and rental relievers go for. That's why these next two starts from Yusei Kikuchi are frankly huge for this organization, because recency matters at the trade deadline. A team needs a guy who's going to be hot for 11 starts. They don't care about 2027. That doesn't exist. If they can get maximum value out of a couple of these guys, maybe you're talking about one or two of these top 30 legitimate prospects. But until we're talking about Chad Green, Vladdy, Bo Bichette, down the line, Chris Bassett, you're probably not talking about significant returns that the average fan has heard of. It's going to be more mid-range, and the Jays will really need to strike gold with one of these, because if they're going to sell, you need something to show for it. Not just a kid who might be a utility guy one day, but a legitimate player, something you can show.
Keegs, you mentioned Yusei Kikuchi and how important these next couple of starts are. We kind of saw him take a step back a little bit, over, let's say, a month or so, or a little bit less than that. And you have spoken to some of these guys, to Kikuchi, to Chris Bassett, to Kevin Gausman, about this team underperforming. Obviously, they are not. We're not anywhere near what we expected them to be. And how sort of, the looming deadline affects them on the field, or does it at all mentally? What have you heard from guys, and, what is sort of the mentality of this team right now, this clubhouse, going into a deadline that should, bring a lot of uncertainty?
Depends a lot on the guy. This has been interesting and uncomfortable for a lot of them. There are players like Chris Bassett, or like Kevin Gausman, who have been around this league. Gosman's a guy who's been DFA'd, for goodness sake. These guys know how the business of it works. Then there's somebody like Danny Jansen, who has been with the Blue Jays for 12 years. He became a man with the Blue Jays. He became a husband, a father, a big leaguer. Like, he spent almost half his life, my goodness, with the organization. That's a lot stranger. I asked Danny about that when we were in, what city, my goodness, were we in? Before the All-Star break, somewhere. And he said, it's just one of these things. Every day I need to control what I can control. That's the business side. And that's one way to approach this. With Yusei Kikuchi, it's a bit of a different approach. We were in San Francisco. My mind is not gone yet, baby. With Yusei Kikuchi, he has allowed in a little more of that emotion, I think. And that is okay. Because, Julius sees this at the ballpark every day. If my plans change 1%, I'm a nightmare to be around. I ruin everyone's day around me. I get cranky. If you told me that I had to pack up and go work in a different city with my family for the next 2 months, that's a lot. Yusei has set up a life here with his wife, with his boy, and for that to be hanging over you is massive. I don't think I can understand how that feels in my job, certainly. And even though there's more on the line, there's more privilege involved with being an MLB player, that's a lot. And Yusei said earlier in the month that, yeah, this does feel strange. It feels different not knowing what's going on. Then he went out and had an amazing start before this bad one. So I'm not sure what to make of that, how that's playing in. But a lot of guys are handling this a lot differently. You're seeing the guys going through this the first time, kind of like a Kikuchi, and certainly with Jansen, taking different approaches. And then when you talk to someone like a Chris Bassett about it, it feels much more normalized. It's kind of has the emotion out of it, which can be good. But again, if you're someone like Kikuchi, I understand where that's coming from, because that cannot be comfortable whatsoever.
We're chatting with Keegan Matheson, Blue Jays beat writer for MLB.com, here on Jays Talk Plus. Show and Julia here with you until 12 p.m. Eastern. Keegan, further on the Kikuchi thing, I know it's interesting you talk about his mentality, I suppose, to a certain extent, because he sat down with Sportsnet's Donovan Bennett at the Blue Jays clubhouse about a month ago. It was the day his son threw out for the first pitch at the Rogers Center. Right. Was when they did this, and they would think that was Kikuchi bobblehead day. And he sat down with him and his wife. And I thought that was an interesting conversation, because I do think like those kinds of chats do underscore what you're talking about, right? Like that it is a business, but that people do have emotions and things that are not just like the decision making is not always underlined by money or dollar signs, I suppose. Like, certainly for the most part, it is when you're a professional athlete. I think probably any sport, but I thought that was really interesting. And I do think that's a part of the conversation sometimes. Even I sometimes forget when it comes to deadline discussions in any sport because, you know, these guys are people. They're like, you know, I think we've almost gotten used to describing players as assets to a certain extent, which, like, I think I understand why we do it, but at the same time, that aspect of the conversation does, like, I don't know, like, kind of dehumanize them sometimes in a certain extent.
Oh, absolutely. I've done it so much. I think of this even with Jimmy Garcia coming back from his arm injury. I will catch myself writing a sentence saying, and it would be great if he got back in time for the Blue Jays to trade him.
Right.
And I catch myself thinking, well, maybe I should care about this man's elbow and his future a little bit as well. And it's a balance. I understand that folks are not tripping over themselves to have sympathy for someone making $10 million. I get it. But there's a lot involved in this on the emotional side for these players, because it's easy for me to sit here and write a story or fire off a tweet about how Yusei Kikuchi or Chad Green or Danny Jansen would make sense for teams X, Y, and Z. But if I logged on to Twitter and saw Yusho or Yuji tweeting about, you know what, it would make a lot of sense for us to send Keegan to Chicago or St. Louis or Kansas City for the next 2 months.
Or Tampa.
I'd be saying, what the hell is going on here? Or, you know what, I accept that trade. I'll kick in some cash. But there is that uncomfortable element here. And if a player is able to, if they are mentally able to block all of that out, that's probably the best way. But if they let it in, they're not failing by doing that. They are being human, and that's completely okay. I think baseball has softened up 1% in this, right? I think over the years, not all the way. But that human element does come into this, especially someone like Kikuchi being a good example. Danny Jansen being a good example, kind of parallel there. Guys with young families who have really come to embrace Toronto as not just a place where they dump a suitcase in a hotel room, but a place where they are setting up somewhat of a life. And there's a lot more than baseball that goes into this. Kikuchi especially, guys, we've seen how much his comfort has mattered over the last few years. 22 to 23, I saw a different man, someone who was so much more confident, comfortable with that clubhouse. It matters. It really does. We don't have a metric for it yet. I'm sure we will someday, but it matters.
Well, Keegan, some guys are going to go, some guys are going to stay. This clubhouse is definitely going to look a lot different post-deadline. Yeah. But Cho and I have been speaking a little bit this week about what or who constitutes the core of this team moving forward. Let's say, let's not even look that far ahead. Let's look 25, 26 here. You have guys like Davis Schneider, Spencer Horwitz, even, you know, an early Ernie Clement maybe, Aleo Jimenez. Guys that are kind of on a bubble right now beyond, you know, the bona fide stars of this team. If you had to, you know, put together kind of like a core for this team moving forward, is there anything in the second half that you would be looking for to make sure, okay, Spencer Horwitz looks like a major leaguer and looks like a part of this team in the years ahead, or even a Davis Schneider? How would you sort of qualify what would constitute the core? Let's focus on batters on the offensive side for now.
Yeah, I'm a believer in a big core. You know, core to me just means somebody that's part of the team and is sticking around. Core a lot of the time gets defined as Vladdy and Bo. Those are your stars. A core is the players you have under control that you expect to keep around. A core can be 15, 16 players, and it's what spins off of that that makes the team. When I'm looking at those, a couple come to mind. Horwitz, one you mentioned. How is he going to adjust? Nowadays, pitchers cannot just look at this and say, oh, there's the guy from AAA, whatever. They've got to look at this guy now. They have to look at how he is hitting, how he's handling every style of pitcher. He's a fascinating hitter. Like, I love watching Spencer Horwitz take an at-bat. My favorite AB to watch used to be Bo. I think right now it's Spencer Horwitz, how he works through it. Even if he's down 0-2, you don't feel like it's over. Really interesting hitter. But can he win the adjustments game? I've seen 100 guys come up and be good for a month. Being good for months 2, 3, 4, 10, 20, that's what's impressive. I think he can do that. Yariel Rodriguez is the other big one for me, for baseball and financial reasons. And, you know, here I go towing the line again between you know, humanizing a player. But Yariel has looked so good lately and is such a fun pitcher to watch. He has that attitude on the mound, such an incredible presence on the mound. that matches his pitching and backs it up. I love watching it. He's looked great these last three starts. If he can prove that he is a legitimate capital S starting pitcher in the major leagues, that changes a lot for the Blue Jays. That he's not just another one of these swing men, can do multiple things. I'm tired of guys that can do multiple things. Let's do one thing great, please. And if Yariel Rodriguez can be a very good starting pitcher, a number three, number four type, not only does that make next year simpler, that allows the Blue Jays to take, let's say, $8-10 million and drag it over to their lineup and say, let's try to fix this instead. They still need to fix out a lot of their depth for the rotation, but something is going to need to change for this lineup next year. My goodness, we know that at this point. And Yariel being good can simplify that. He's looked fantastic lately, really liked the signing at the time. It's looked even better than I expected so far. So if he can do that, a lot gets easier, at least going forward for that core.
Keegan, before we let you go, we appreciate you doing this for us. I did want to get to the bullpen with you very briefly.
Yeah.
And we talked about guys who might not be on this team in short order. And the bullpen, that might include Trevor Richards. It might include Jimmy Garcia. We'll see. But let's say for the sake of this conversation, this exercise, that they're not on the team. And that means that for a relatively, let's call it beleaguered, I think putting it lightly, bullpen, you know, it's going to get a little shorter, unfortunately, if those two guys go. I got to say, I've been, to stay positive, I've been pretty impressed with Brandon Little and Ryan Burr and again, like, they're not pitching in the highest leverage by any means, but I think when they have come in, they've been able to put out some fires. And I think we have seen enough, at least for me, and I'm curious where you fall on this, at least for me, that I feel confident that when they go out, they're not going to get completely rocked, right? Like, and that's obviously that there's a fine line between like closer and the guys who can't be on an MLB field. But those guys specifically, for what the assets, again, to your point, humanizing people, the assets given up, whether it's cash or prospects, or for example, for either of those two guys, that has been a strength of the front office, which is a front office we've criticized a lot recently in terms of being able to turn smaller pieces into guys that have been serviceable at the major league level.
Yeah, you need to find 10, 12 of those every year. And guys like Little, like Ryan Burr, who I've liked watching, and I'm interested to see more Ryan Burr down the stretch. These sentences you never thought you'd be saying back in spring training, but here we are. I am interested to see both of these guys. Brandon Little has crazy stuff. John Schneider just keeps saying over and over, he's got to throw strikes. And if you do that, it's amazing stuff. But both of these relievers coming down the stretch, Eric Swanson hopefully will be back and get into a bit of a groove to finish off his year, which would be big news for this team. You've got to start filling out at least those number 6, 7, 8 relievers for next year. Get a longer look at Nate Pearson. Is he going to be this type of up and down guy forever? Or do you see him go on a bit of a run down the stretch? Because next year, I think it's obvious the Blue Jays are going to need one, maybe two good relievers. Like, we're talking relievers that you spend some cash on. And they're also going to need to fill out that middle. And it's kind of a quantity approach. I look at relievers kind of like prospects in that sense, where each spring, if you go in with 8 or 10 or 12 relievers for 3 or 4 jobs, you're probably in a pretty good spot. And if they have good stuff, like a Little, that's even better. You just need them to get hot for 2 or 3 months a lot of the time. You need to know when to buy in and when to cash out with a lot of these relievers when they are hot. And down the stretch is going to be wide open for a lot of these guys to audition. Bowden Francis might be another. Maybe he's in the rotation patching it up for Yusei Kikuchi, or maybe he's in a long role. Just let the guy do one thing for a couple of months, I hope, and see who he can be. But there's going to be a lot of noise removed. The stakes aren't going to be all that high. But for guys like Brandon Little and Ryan Burr trying to stick in the big leagues, I promise you, it's high stakes. And they should get 2 months of regular, we're talking 7th, 8th inning work, to pretty much audition for a job for 2025.
Well, Keegan, when we talk about elite relievers, you're our elite closer. We appreciate this, man. I guess today you're our opener, but still, we do appreciate it. It's always fun seeing you. Nice to catch up with you. And I guess I'll see you at the Rogers Center. We both will, in short order.
That's right.
You got it, my friends. Happy to join you. We'll see you tomorrow.
There he goes. That's Keegan Mathison from MLB.com. You know, he brings up a good point. Lots of good points from Keegan, as usual, Jules. But he brings up a good point as to the rest of this season being effectively an audition for like the entire bullpen.
Yeah.
Right? Like let's assume, and I do think if the Jays are going to be out of contention, I don't really think there's a point to rushing Jordan Romano back. You know what I mean?
Like
he's injured. He wasn't particularly dealing that great. So maybe let's put him aside for now. So no Jordan Romano. Jimmy Garcia might not be a Blue Jay in a couple of weeks. We'll see. So if those two are not part of your equation, Chad Green is established. He has a specific role. Even if right now I believe he's pitching like a little, I don't know what the right word is. Like maybe not in the right role in terms of being the elite closer. Like he might be like a setup guy
of
or
course.
A seventh inning guy, but he's being used in that role for now. But still Chad Green, we know what he is. And then it's kind of just everybody else. Really at this point?
Right on. And you know, that's not a bad thing. If you're not contending, that is not a bad thing. You are definitely looking ahead and looking to build 2024. The Blue Jays, it's becoming more and more clear that they're maybe going to retool with an eye on competing again next year.
Right.
And so if you can get a head start and start that that spring training type of work in analyzing your relievers and seeing what they have and seeing how hot they can get and how well they can handle a little bit of higher leverage spots, if you can do that with a few months of prior to spring training, then should put you in a better position to compete next year as well.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see what role Brendan Little, role Ryan Burr. There a whole bunch of these guys. I mean, Keegan brought up Nate Pearson, and we've seen Zach Pop, for example. And I mean, neither of the Pearson and Pop have pitched that great, for a longer consistent period of time. So I'm curious to see like what all of their roles shake out to be. But I think that to Keegan's point, you're going to need like double digit more versions of trades that bring you guys like a Burr, like a Cabrera before him, like a Brendan Little, for example.
And these are guys that you hope are still developing.
Yeah.
Right? These are guys that you hope are not done with their major league growth yet. And so if you can also give them a little bit of more experience this year in letting them work on the physical and mental side of the game in different situations, different innings, then it should help with their growth as well as the team's development moving forward.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. Let's step aside, take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue our tour of MLB.com with Manny Randhawa, writer who was at the All-Star break. He was out down in Texas. And maybe we'll take a peek around the rest of Major League Baseball as the trade deadline discussions continue to intensify. It's going to be a pretty exciting next couple of weeks. So Manny on the other side from MLB.com. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.
Hey, it's Ailish Forafar.
And I'm Justin Cuthbert.
Join us as we discuss the most important sports stories of the day and tee up the biggest games of the night.
It's The Fan pregame, 6 p.m. weekdays on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're on Sportsnet 360 as well. Sho Ali, Julia Kreutz, thanks for being with us. We're here until 12 p.m. Eastern. The next segment, we'll chat with Kennedy Landry, Rangers beat writer from MLB.com. Get into her thoughts about the deadline, chat about the Rangers a little bit. They're also not doing so hot, so we'll see how things are going out in Texas. But joining us right now, also from MLB.com, baseball writer for MLB.com is Manny Randhawa, joining us here on Jays Talk Plus. Manny, how are you?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you carving out some time for us. I was talking about the All-Star game there, Manny. I know you were down in Texas. How were the festivities, first of all? And secondly, I was reading your article on MLB.com. You got the thoughts from Hideo Nomo, I guess prior to Paul Skeens, the thoughts about the last rookie pitcher to do this since before Paul Skeens, which is pretty remarkable that it happened like almost 30 years ago. Did Paul Skeens live up to the hype for you?
Can you say that again? I'm sorry, I missed that. I missed the last part of that.
Well, did Paul Skeens live up to all the hype we have been discussing?
Oh, He's such a phenom. For sure. I mean, yeah. I think we would have all loved to see some kind of like Pedro-like performance from Paul Skeens. Obviously, coming 25 years after Pedro Martinez struck five of the first six NL batters in the 1999 All-Star game in Boston, including McGuire and Larry Walker and you know, some legendary players, and that was a great performance. And we wanted to see something akin to that, but you know, he did fine, you know, he did fine. And for a guy who's 22, who is, you know, one of this is one of those LeBron James, situations where it's like, you've been in a fishbowl, you know, and everyone knows you, everyone expects the moon from you. And if you deliver, it's just that much more impressive under the circumstances. And I think he did that in the All-Star game. And, you know, in talking with Nomo, it's basically like, you know, the parallels there are so interesting, because you've got the first rookie pitcher in 29 years to start an All-Star game. And it's in the same city. And it's just this kind of sensation that we can't get enough of. And Paul Skene certainly lived up to the hype.
Hey, Manny, thank you for doing this. We wanted to chat with you. Obviously, the conversation now post All-Star break, it goes to the trade deadline. There's no way around it. Yep. And we're wondering, this looks like a seller's market, but are there any of these bubble teams that sort of, you know, catch your eye? Is there a team specifically that you think, this could be a major player one way or another? You know, the Astros come to mind, maybe the Mets, teams like that. There aren't necessarily, you know, top of the line contenders, but have been in the mix. Is there a team that is kind of catching your eye here ahead of the trade deadline?
Well, I don't think it's a team that fits all of the criteria that you just mentioned, but I am, just since we were talking about Paul Skene, I think the Pirates are really interesting, because they're 48-48. They're a team that is, you know, yeah, they're a bubble. I guess you can consider them to be a bubble team, but they're a team that has Paul Skene and Jared Jones, man. I mean, at the top of that rotation, you don't want to see those two guys, man. If you're in a postseason series, especially a short one, early on. And so, you know, we've seen in the postseason, particularly in last season, last postseason, where we saw the Dodgers get bounced early. We saw the Braves get bounced early. You just got to have you're playing right, hot at the right time, and you have a couple of stud pitchers, you can really make some noise. So they're really interesting. Padres are interesting too, because they're a team that, you know, we know they're star studded. I know Tatis is hurt right now. But if he can come back here within a short period of time, his injury is kind of, it's a stress related injury in his leg, that it's like kind of vague in terms of whether or not he's going to be back soon or not. But, you know, you've got players there. You got some players, Xander Bogaerts, Manny Machado. They haven't always lived up to the billing and to the potential there. But if they get hot as well, you might see them do something. The National League is really the league to watch, because in the American League, things are kind of a little bit more settled, for lack of a better word, right now. The Royals are a fun team still. They started off real hot. They cooled off a little bit recently, but I think that's a team that is really going to think about what pieces it needs to add on, because, you know, it's got the starting pitching. It needs to really help with the bullpen. They added Hunter Harvey last week before the break. I think they're going to do that a little bit more. They're going to look for some outfield help. They would be a fun team with Bobby Witt Jr. Leading the way there. They would be a fun team to watch. The Astros, man, you know, I think in the back of our minds, we all knew that the Astros were going to figure it out at some point.
Yeah.
The longer it went into the season, the more is this going to happen? Really? I mean, is it possible that this team doesn't get their act together? And they're getting their act together. So I definitely see them being a team that could make some moves, and probably will make some moves. But after that, that's pretty much it. I mean, you have Braves, who are just kind of tepid team. They're just kind of like, you know, they're there, but it doesn't seem like they're going to be a major factor. And then everybody else, I mean, there are teams who, you know, you guys are well familiar with the situation with Toronto, with Blue Jays, and how they have just collapsed in 2024. The defending champion Rangers, you know, they might, you know, given what they've got, given that they are coming off the World Series championship, they might give thought to still trying to be a buyer. But you know, a lot is going to depend here on the next week or so for Texas, the first week of the second half. You know, but those are mainly the teams in the American League. In the National League, you've got within three and a half games, you got the Cubs, Giants, Reds, Pirates, Padres, D-backs, all within 3.5 games of a wild card spot. So you could definitely see those teams be players. Certainly, the Reds, another exciting team. You know, Ellie De La Cruz leading the way there. You can kind of, you know, they're not the same level as the Royals, but you kind of see them as maybe soon being that team that's kind of like the 2024 Royals.
And I find the wild card status so interesting, Manny, and you laid it out for both leagues. And yeah, I mean, apart from the Rockies, Marlins, and Nationals, pretty much everyone is in the wild card race, and like you said, less so in the American League. But I find the mere existence of the third wild card has essentially meant that more teams will perhaps refuse to sell when maybe they should, right? Maybe they should. And I mean, the third wild card, it hasn't exactly existed for a long period of time. So we'll see how that plays out over the course of the next decade or so. But I find it interesting because it essentially means that, like, the Cubs, to use them as an example, are 47-51. The Blue Jays are 44-52. Like, these are probably teams that should sell. But I mean, if they didn't sell because they're X amount of games out of the wild card, it's probably because a lot of teams see the Washington Nationals the year they won the World Series, or the Diamondbacks last year going all the way to the World Series, or many teams like that with these Cinderella stories either getting close or actually succeeding in Washington's case. That has been the case because of the existence of the third wild card, which I find vis-a-vis the trade deadline, it has kind of meant teams hold on as long as humanly possible before they start actually selling off assets.
That's a great point, Joe, because like, there was a time, I mean, can you imagine, or can you think back to the time when we had just the one wild card team, you know, in each league? And it's just changed so much. I mean, the Arizona Diamondbacks did a lot to further the that narrative that you just talked about, that, you know what, just get into the tournament, man. And if you can, it's become like March Madness in that sense, that if you can get into the tournament and get hot, you can go all the way to the World Series and maybe even win it. I mean, the D-backs showed us that potential. And I think that teams, I agree with you in the sense that I think the teams are waiting longer to rebuild when they ought to be looking ahead toward the future, like maybe a 5-year window into the future. You would think that this would be a good time to start rebuilding for a new competitive window. The competitive window has been opened wide with the third wild card. And I think there are going to be more teams that perhaps, like you put it, should rebuild at this point because of the way that the postseason is a crapshoot. You don't know what's going to happen postseason. In the same sense that you could go all the way and surprise the whole world and make it to the World Series, the flip side of the coin is that, you know, you get in by one game, you should have spent that second half, you know, selling assets and rebuilding your farm system. Look at the Blue Jays farm system was ranked 24th coming into this season. So like, this would be the time for them to really restock. And they may very well do that because of kind of where they're at. But teams that are more on the bubble, like you mentioned, I think they're when they maybe should be giving consideration to the fact that, you know, even if we make the postseason, you know, what are the odds that we actually make it all the way to the World Series and can win a title versus on the other hand, you know, let's go ahead and start rebuilding now so that we can be in a position. Because here's the thing, if in this current climate, postseason climate with the third wild card, you need to be in the playoffs every year for a good long time to have a real chance to win the World Series because of the fact that teams do get bound. Look at the Dodgers, man. They won the World Series in 2020. And I think to many people, that just didn't count in their minds because of the COVID shortened season and all these other years. If there was a regular season trophy, man, they'd be the champs, right? I mean, they would have a lot of hardware, a lot to show for it, but there isn't. And they are a classic example of a team that gets back there every year to give themselves a chance. Last year, they were disappointed yet again. And, you know, people, you know, there's going to be memes and there are going to be people, you know, being critical of the Dodgers because they can't win the postseason. But hey, they're back there every year, and they give themselves a chance. If you're a team that's kind of on the bubble and you don't make that choice, maybe a hard choice to rebuild at the right time, then you could be sacrificing future contention in future seasons, where you can keep coming back to the postseason and giving yourself the chance, even if you're bounced one year, to be back in the next and give yourself a higher chance to win the World Series in a certain range of time, rather than let's go for it all this year because we're just close enough to that third wild card spot.
It's kind of a don't put all your eggs in one basket type of situation, right, Manny? Kind of trying to maintain.
Yeah, in one year, right? The basket being 2024 or 2025 or 2026 or whatever.
You spoke about the Dodgers and the heartbreak. You know, the D-backs obviously played the center role in that, sweeping them in the division series. But you are right. The Dodgers aren't necessarily a team that have had to worry too much about retooling or rebuilding, or it is a team that is very, very consistently in the postseason. At the same time, not a ton to show for it. Now, this year, a ton of injuries on the pitching side for them, right? But it seems like more so than in past years because of the acquisition of Tyler Glass, now certainly signing Shohei Ohtani. It seems like this is a little bit more of a World Series or bust type of year for the Dodgers. How do you sort of see that, and what will it take for the Dodgers to call this season a success? Is it World Series or bust?
Yeah, so somebody asked me on another radio spot a couple weeks ago, who's the team that has the most pressure to win the World Series? And I said the Yankees. And they were a little bit surprised. They're in LA, but I was there a little bit surprised, of course, because they're in LA and they're like, well, what about the Dodgers? Well, yeah, certainly the Dodgers have a lot of pressure to win the World Series. You signed Shohei Ohtani. You have three MVPs leading off your lineup. You've got all these expectations, especially because of the disappointments of recent years. But the reason I said the Yankees is because they haven't been to the World Series since 2009, and it's the Yankees. They haven't won a World Series. They haven't won a World Series. Depending on when you count the beginning of the 21st century, they haven't won a World Series this century. So that's saying a lot for the New York Yankees. The Dodgers are going to be back. Kind of like what you just alluded to, Julia. They're never in a position where they don't feel like they are going to be in the postseason for sure, and that they can't, you know, weather the storm a little bit with injuries and things like that. It is more this year because of the optics, right? That you sign Ohtani. It's almost like we signed Ohtani because this is not the full reason why they signed Ohtani, but we signed Ohtani because it's World Series or bust. We can't just keep falling short. And yeah, you can't keep falling short, but you have Ohtani for a long time. And you have money, and you have a team that is, you know, going to be able to spend that kind of money. And the free agents will be on the market every year. And you know you're going to be in a position to get back there. The Yankees, they've got money. They're in a similar position there. But because of that market and because of the fact that they haven't even been to a World Series in 15 years, which is one of the longest streaks in their history, if not the longest in the last 100 years or whatever, from being a perspective of being in the World Series, I think they have more pressure. But you're right. The Dodgers do have a lot of pressure. But again, they'll be back next year. The NL West is Dodgers, and then everyone else, you know, try for a wild card spot, except the Rockies. They'll never be in that conversation whatsoever. But everyone else kind of try for the wild card. It's kind of like one of those Brad Pitt Moneyball situations, yes. Right? Whenever you do this, it's what you think of your baseball fan. But that's kind of how the NL West is set up. The AL East, however, assuming the Blue Jays, you know, kind of get back to competing a little bit. I mean, I think that the jury's still out on that one because I think a lot of people see that the window may have closed for this competitive window. But I don't think I'm not basing this on any hard, evidence or anything. But I don't think that Bo is going anywhere. I don't think that Vlad's going anywhere. They're going to sell. I'm sure they're going to make trades. They're going to move guys, maybe Danny Jansen, some guys like that. But those two guys, especially Bo Bichette, just not having a great year, that stuff's going to happen. He's just too talented not to figure it out. But Vlad, I'd worry about the power a little bit. The slugging has continually gone down since that phenomenal year where he would have been MVP if not for Shohei doing historic things. But the AL East is strong. and it's going to stay strong compared with the NL West. So I think the Dodgers know they'll be back and they'll have that chance again. But, you know, every year that goes by, 2020 notwithstanding, those fans are certainly going to be impatient too.
Manny, good of you to do this for us, man. We appreciate you carving out some time for us here in Toronto. Best of luck with the second half, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me, guys.
There he goes. Manny Randhawa, baseball writer for MLB.com. I don't disagree that the Dodgers have a lot of pressure, but at the same time, no one feels bad for the Dodgers, Julia.
No one feels bad for the Dodgers.
I'm going to guess that the Jays fans would gladly switch places with the Dodgers fans, all things considered, but... No, I find the discussion around who will be buyers, who will be sellers at the deadline, which is in less than 2 weeks, fascinating because ultimately there are a couple of teams. We talked about this with Brandon Weil yesterday, but there are a couple of squads that have the ability to reshape this deadline in the sense of, are they going to sell? Are they going to be buyers? And I mean, it might be teams that you don't expect, right? I mean, maybe the Rays decide they're not very close. Maybe they sell a Zach Eflin to a team that really needs a starting rotation piece, right? Maybe the Cardinals decide that they want to be buyers and bring in rotation pieces. For example, you know, you have the Mets that have turned their season around thanks to Grimace, apparently.
Yeah. They're not trading Grimace, that's for sure.
They definitely don't want to trade Grimace, and now they're certainly not trading Pete Alonso or JD Martinez at this point. It just, there are so many teams that have changed their fortunes, and the Blue Jays have not necessarily done that, so I wonder if they decide to hop in the boat as the White Sox and say, the White Sox are saying, well, we're going to trade Garrett Crochet, we're going to trade Luis Robert Jr. Maybe the Jays decide to also do that and trade not only guys who are UFAs, like we've been discussing, but guys with term. I know that the prevailing sentiment is that that's not going to happen, but at the same time, the Blue Jays are in a very unique spot within the teams that are not, you know, two or three games out of a wild card spot.
Well, you spoke about the Rays a little bit, Sho, and the Rays are a good example of a team that is pretty active for the most part. They trade quite a bit, not just at the deadline, but, you know, this is an That's aggressive fair. Team yeah. in terms of making deals. But, you know, it's kind of a buying and selling situation. It's kind of a little bit of both pretty much every year for the Rays, especially in this window of, you know, postseason success and things of the sort. So the Blue Jays can explore a similar avenue here. And if they want to keep their dealing, say, to the unrestricted free agents, that's okay. It is going to limit their options a little bit. It is going definitely to limit their return. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's a bad proposition, because if they can sort of build a stronger roster around the pieces that will stay, and still, you know, replenish a little bit of the farm system, get a little bit more of an eye towards the future while still trying to put a contender on the field next year, that's okay. I think that the problem is that you're, based on this, you are assuming that they are not at all contending this season, is something that the front office has not come out and said yet, right? So there's a ton of strategy involved, obviously, but I think that it starts with understanding what exactly the plan is for this year and realistically what it is that this team can accomplish this year.
Because I think, and Manny brought up something interesting with the idea, when you're talking about windows being open or closed, right, Jules? And, you know, whatever you want to say about the Blue Jays window, whether it's closed or whether it's shutting or close to close, I think that's fairer way of saying it. But I'm not sure that, like, when it comes to having the idea of what is competition and what does it mean to be competitive, I don't really think it should mean, let's say, just squeaking into the third wild card and rolling the dice. And it managed right that it is a crapshoot in the playoffs, as we have seen. The Dodgers have not had a lot of sustained success. The Yankees have not had a lot of sustained success. And these are teams that have won a lot of ball games. So I wonder, when it comes to that objective, the Blue Jays probably want to just do more than squeak into the third wild card.
That would be ideal, right, Sho? it's pretty unbelievable to think just how long the Blue Jays went without being in the postseason.
Yeah.
And it is all about increasing the likelihood or the probability of doing something special in the playoffs. So this will be a more complex deadline than the past ones, for sure.
The deadline is less than 2 weeks away. Of course, we'll continue covering it on Jays Talk Plus. On the other side, we'll chat with Kennedy Landry, Rangers beat writer for MLB.com. Get her thoughts on the All-Star break. She was down in Texas playing host, I would imagine. So chat with Kennedy about that and get into the deadline more with her around the American League. You're listening to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network, watching on Sportsnet 360. We're back after this.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hour 2 of JSTOC Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network. You're also watching on Sportsnet 360. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you until the top of the hour. Appreciate you all being with us. Still want to reach us anytime, 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. Standard messaging and data rates may apply if you do choose to text us at 590-590, but we will be doing our first half awards for the Blue Jays. More of a difficult proposition these days, Jules, but hey, we will still do our best in the coming segment. Joining us right now, though, on Jays Talk Plus, always fun to catch up with Kennedy Landry, Rangers beat writer for MLB.com. Kennedy, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are y'all? Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're doing great. We appreciate you carving out some time for us. Look, I know you played host to a lot of people with the All-Star Game in Texas, but before we talk about the All-Star Game, I did want to ask you, I saw that you had seen, you rewatched Twister, 1996, Helen Hunt, Bill Paxton. Great movie. I hope the sequel is good. I've not yet seen it. I hope it's good. My only recollection of that movie, because I've not seen it in a long time, is that there's a scene about midway through where they eat like steak and eggs and gravy. And I got to say that is, whenever I think of famous movie meals, that's one of the things I think of the most. But I do hope you enjoyed the rewatch.
Yeah, oh yeah, I'm seeing Twisters tonight at 10 o'clock.
Oh, okay.
So, the sequel, yeah, very excited. So that's the reason I was rewatching the movie. I highly recommend the rewatch. It's aggressively 90s in the best way possible. So yeah,
I like it. That should be the tagline: aggressively 90s in the best way possible. I think that's phenomenal stuff. Well, appreciate you doing this for us. I'm glad you enjoyed it. How did you enjoy the All-Star break? It was looks like a lot of fun. I mean, the typically marks the midway point of the season, but the Derby was a lot of fun. I have long said the Derby is my favorite All-Star event amongst all sports, like the dunk contest, three-point shootout, fastest skater, whatever. But it's my favorite amongst all of them. You were there. You were there for the All-Star Game as well. Tell us about how the experience was.
Yeah, playing host is very overwhelming, I'll say. Like, you feel like everybody's in your spots. Like, you don't have your like mental breakdown spot like you normally have when you're on a beat. But it was a lot of fun. I think I agree that the Derby is one of the best days of all of sports, in my opinion. It's one of the best days in all of baseball. I love the All-Star Game. I think I texted my friends the other day. I was like, this is very wholesome. So like, don't mention it afterwards, but I still like really love the MLB All-Star Game. Like, I think it still has the same like pomp and circumstance that it's always had. It's still a lot of fun. Even when you're an adult and you're here and just being around everything, it was a great time. It being in Texas, the Rangers, the World Series champs. I mean, it was a phenomenal week. So I'm happy to get back to work and happy to have a little bit of downtime. It was an exhausting week, but it was a lot of fun.
I love that you said that, you know, you can still have fun even though you're an adult, which really does sort of sum up the sentiment of an entire generation here. Thank you for that. But you also mentioned the World Series run, right, Kennedy? And you had some people in your spots there too. I was one of them at one point. But how did the All-Star Game or the All-Star festivities sort of compare to the World Series run from your vantage point, you know, work-wise?
Yeah, I think they're both very exhausting events work-wise. I do think All-Star Game had more people than the World Series, just, you know, being around both of those things within the last, 10 months it's been. And it's just kind of overwhelming. You've been in that press box, you've been in this ballpark. It's not the best working press box in the country, I'll tell you that. And just when you add people across the country on top of it, it definitely gets overwhelming. Like I said, the World Series was a lot of fun. I was happy when it was over. By the time we got to November 1st and you work for a month straight, it kind of felt exhausting. And this past week has felt exhausting as well. But again, it was a lot of fun. The World Series has that same vibe as kind of the All-Star Game and opening day, where you know, the culmination of everything kind of comes together, and especially with the Rangers, who've never won a World Series in their franchise's history. It was great to be a part of, great to cover it, even though I've only been here for 4 years. I haven't gone through the struggles that the Rangers fans have gone through, but everything's been great. Bruce Bochy and the Rangers clubhouse, they all deserve that. And being able to be here for both of these events has been great.
We're chatting with Kennedy Landry, Rangers beat writer for MLB.com here on Jays Talk Plus. We're here until the top of the hour. Show and Julia here with you. So Kennedy, post World Series, the Rangers are now 46-50. They are, what, 7.5 games back of the third wild card. And we have a familiar conversation in Toronto these days about the Toronto Blue Jays. But, you know, when it comes to the deadline, Julia and I have been doing this a lot all week as the deadline's less than 2 weeks away. And when it comes to trying to forecast what will happen around Major League Baseball, the Rangers are in a really interesting position because, you know, they're coming off a World Series championship, so if it feels like those kinds of years give you a little bit of cachet, like it earns you a little bit of leeway, but at the same time, you know, you feel like the window is open right now. You want to maximize it as much as possible. When you look at the Rangers, what do you see them doing at the deadline here in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I actually wrote this a couple of days ago for kind of a midterm report, but it feels like the Rangers are in the same place that the Mariners were in at this point last year. This division is not great, if I had to describe it right now. And the Mariners are at the top of the division right now. The Astros are one game back of them, and the Rangers are five games back of them. That's the exact, give or take a few games, same way things were last year with the Rangers at the top, the Astros right behind them, and the Mariners three games back. So I feel like the Rangers are in kind of a similar position where they will like softly sell, you know, not trade off any big pieces a la Max Scherzer, Nathan Eovaldi, but maybe a Michael Lorenzen, Andrew Heaney type, get some, you know, good prospects back, but still keep themselves in the hunt, keep themselves in a position to go on a run in August or September. You know, this team is fully capable of rambling off, you know, 8, 10, 12 wins in a row. You know, they're on a good stretch right now going into the break, but the inconsistencies have hurt them. I think anybody that has watched the Texas Rangers has seen this offense kind of collapse in big moments, in runners in scoring position, bases loaded, all of those things. But the reason I, you know, point out Michael Lorenzen, Andrew Heaney, all of these things is because they're going to have 10 starting pitchers if everybody is healthy. I know that's a large caveat these days, but, you know, Max Scherzer's back. He's pitching well. Tyler Mahle will be back before the trade deadline, coming off his Tommy John surgery. Jacob deGrom will be back shortly after the trade deadline, after his Tommy John surgery. So I know that it rarely happens that all 10 of those starting pitchers will be healthy at the same time, but it seems like we're barreling right towards that. And you can't put all of your starting pitchers in the bullpen, and you can't put a 10-year big league veteran down in Round Rock. So I think the best course of action would be probably to trade a couple of these starting pitchers, get something back in return, and still gear down for a run in these last 2 months of the season to try to make this division race kind of interesting.
Kennedy, you mentioned the health aspect. This is a team that, like any teams in Major League Baseball, seems to have been hit quite hard by injuries on the pitching front. And at the same time, the offense inconsistent, maybe underperforming at times, and still they're kind of right there, right? The Rangers seem to be in a pretty decent position to make another postseason run. But what needs to go right here in the second half for them to actually have that chance?
Yeah, I think the offense is it. Despite all of the pitching injuries, the rotation has been pretty good, quite frankly. I think everybody except for John Gray has an ERA under 4 in the rotation. Dane Dunning recently moved to the bullpen when Max Scherzer got back from the IL. So the pitching kind of just needs to keep doing what it's doing, and the offense needs to find its groove. Corey Seager got off to a very un-Corey Seager-like start, but he's looked exactly like the World Series MVP over the last few months. Marcus Semien was in a huge kind of 6-week slump until recently, where he's on an 8-game hit streak going into the break, the, you know, all-star starter at second base. And Josh Smith has been phenomenal in place of Josh Young at third base. And so getting Josh Young back first and foremost, he, you know, broke his wrist in the fourth game of the season with a hit by pitch in Tampa, will do wonders for this offense. You know, you get back a middle of the order bat, you know, that changes the entire dynamic of this offense. And then, you know, you get Evan Carter back. That could also change the dynamic of this offense. So honestly, I think what needs to go right is, you know, health first and foremost, but if everybody can just kind of play to their potential, and I know that sounds like kind of stupid and obvious, like, yes, everybody plays to their potential, they'll be good. But But we saw what this offense could do last year in the postseason. This entire offense is the same except for they swapped out Wyatt Langford for Mitch Garver for Wyatt Langford. So if you make that work, if everybody's healthy and you can make that play, I think they can compete with anybody in the country. That includes the Houston Astros, who they just took 2 of 3 from before the break. So I think over these next few weeks, we'll learn a lot in terms of the health of these players and how the guys come out of the break offensively and where the Rangers are positioning themselves going into the deadline.
Kennedy, I'm glad you mentioned Wyatt Langford, because I remember when he was, I guess before the season, he was a trendy pick for AL Rookie of the Year. And I think there was a lot depends on other guys, certainly. Like, I think people wondered, like, would Jackson Holliday get called up, for example? But Wyatt Langford, I know he was injured for a chunk there, but he has been a lot of fun to watch. And I'm curious, you get to see him up close. I'm curious, when you look at such a young man, I mean, he's 22 years old, and he gets to play for the defending World Series champ. It's a pretty good place to be. What do you see when you watch Langford on a daily basis?
And the dude, I started calling him in spring training a young jacked lad. It was an inside joke between the beats, because he's 22. He's a young guy. He's married, which is kind of just crazy to me. But he's so mature and he knows what he's talking about with baseball, and he's so smart. And he's so strong. Like, he's like, when I say he's jacked, the kid is jacked. he played in the College World Series, over a year ago. And now he's again playing for the reigning World Series champ. I mean, going into spring training, a lot of people were like, yeah, I think he's going to make the opening day roster. And I was like, I'm not going to say all that. I mean, come on, kid was in college like 2 days ago. He went on this stretch in spring training, I think five straight Cactus League games with home runs. And I was like, oh, I think I'm wrong here. I think I'm the one that's wrong here. And watching that play out again, he had a slow start, kind of was struggling to find his power at this level. But once he's gotten the big league pitching figured out, I mean, he's looked like one of the best players in this lineup, quite frankly. He was hitting cleanup the last seven games of the first half, which, and you look at a lineup that has, Adolis Garcia, the ALCS MVP and home run derby participant the other day, Nathaniel Lowe, who's got a lot of pop in his bat, a lot of really big bats in this lineup, and you have the 22-year-old hitting cleanup. I think that says wonders what Bruce Bochy feels about this kid and what the Rangers do as well.
Yeah, when you can have sort of that igniter, right? If especially if that area of your game, of your team is struggling, that's certainly a valuable piece to have, and kind of segues into my next question, which is Kirby Yates, right? Who has been sort of that same sort of asset for the Rangers bullpen, but obviously All-Star, he did pretty well at the All-Star game too. And it's also a guy that we are maybe putting on the trade block a little bit, right? We don't know. There's a little bit of a question here whether Yates will remain with the Rangers after the deadline. Kennedy, do you see that happening? What would the Rangers look for in a trade that involved Kirby Yates? And does it seem likely to you at this point?
I think Chris Young has talked to the media a few times in these last few weeks just about, he doesn't believe they're selling like that, basically. A lot can change in these 2 weeks until the deadline, but Chris Young is pretty adamant that this team can compete, and that includes, not shipping off Kirby Yates. Kirby's been phenomenal. He has a sub-1 ERA. He's perfect at, 14 for 14 in save opportunities, I believe. The Rangers haven't given him a lot of save opportunities for about a month stretch there, but it'll be interesting to see, how a guy like Kirby Yates, who is, probably having the best year of his career in the second All-Star appearance, coming off kind of a fine year in Atlanta last year, but he wanted to come to Texas and, prove that he could be contribute to a big league club. And he's done that and more, obviously. I think when we get closer to the deadline, you look at some of the past trades for closers, relievers, like, Paul Sewald last year, even Rangers, fellow Ranger pitcher David Robertson last year as well, and how these guys could be traded for, what they could be traded for. I think, it'd be irresponsible for the Rangers to not at the very least consider it. But I do think if you trade Kirby Yates or David Robertson, that might be that you might be conceding a bit that, you know, you don't think this team will compete those last 2 months of the season. So I'm not entirely sure what Chris Young is thinking there, because he, well, actually, no, I am sure, because he doesn't seem to think that the Rangers will be selling. But I'm not totally sold on that idea either, if that makes any sense.
It sure does.
Kenny, before we let you run, we appreciate you being generous with your time for us. Also, I love this mug, Star Wars. Absolutely amazing.
Nice. That's great.
That's phenomenal.
The
I love the handle.
Lightsaber and great.
That's so great. I'm glad we got that. So before we let you go, you know, I'm looking at the standings here, and we were asking this question of a lot of our guests this week, and we can narrow it to the American League. When it comes to, I suppose, as we approach the last 66 games or so, the second half of the season, I guess drawing a line in the sand between the pretenders and the contenders, let's call it that, right? And okay. The Guardians, Orioles, and Mariners are currently leading their division. The wildcard teams, the Yankees, Twins, and Red Sox. The Royals are 2 games out. The Astros are 3.5 games out. The Rays are 5.5 games out. And then you can go from there. Where do you draw that line? Even if you're only looking at the playoff teams and you're looking at teams that are actual World Series contenders, because I think we see a lot these days with the wild card, especially with a third wild card, it doesn't necessarily mean that every team is in theory capable of actually winning the World Series, even though you do see guys come out of the second or third wild card spot. When you look at the playoff race, I'm curious if you see any bona fide threats. Are the Guardians really going to win the World Series? Is it going to be the Yankees? Will it be the Astros? Will the Rangers make a late run? I'm curious what you see.
You know, I do want to say, I said this on a podcast last year, I think, that the Houston Astros are inevitable until they tell us they're not.
Fair.
I see the Houston Astros this last decade as like Nick Saban in the SEC. As I went to LSU, that's I just think doesn't matter. That's just they're gonna end up there at the end. They're gonna be in the ALCS just because that's what they do. So I'm never going to count Houston out. You know, personally, I think you think, you know, Cleveland's really good. I don't know how, like, the AL Central, it's very weird. I think the AL West ended up what we thought the AL Central was. Like, the AL West is really bad, and the AL Central, all of those teams are, like, over 500 or, like, right in the thick of things. So it's fascinating. And I'm looking at these standings right now, and I'm like, I don't think Detroit is, like, a contender per se, because everybody's talking about them trading Tarik Skubal. You know, the Rays are the Rays, and you know, how are you evaluating Toronto and Texas right there next to each other? Because everything below Toronto, it's whatever. It's you know, it's Anaheim, it's Oakland, it's Chicago, right? So I do think that think of these things. A lot of these teams above, like Toronto, I mean, you guys could probably tell me more about what the Blue Jays are thinking right now. But everybody above Texas and Toronto is, I think, has a chance to make the playoffs and get to the World Series, except maybe Detroit.
Yeah,
I do think so. I think that is true.
Yeah, it is pretty wild. We were just talking, Kennedy. It is pretty wild that the Blue Jays have a better record than only 3 teams. Is it in the American
it's
League?
Not great.
It's different for sure.
Yeah, it's not something we're used to here in Toronto. But you know what? I think when it comes to the trade deadline, a lot of teams, the Blue Jays, maybe the Rangers, maybe the Rays and the Tigers, are going to be involved in this going forward. I think it's going to be really tumultuous. But I find it kind of fun, and I appreciate you joining us to chat about it, chat about the Rangers' potential plans, and look forward to the second half. Have a great second half. We appreciate you doing this, and we'll hopefully chat down the road.
Awesome. Thank you all for having me. Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. Casual. There she goes. Kennedy Landry, Rangers beat writer from MLB.com. Yeah, for the radio listeners, if you couldn't visualize the cup she was holding, it was like a very large, long coffee mug with the Star Wars A New Hope poster on it, and the handle was a lightsaber.
We didn't ask her what was in it. But the mug itself was great.
Yes, I assume coffee. But I mean, you never know. I've never been to Texas. I don't know how they do things in Texas. So maybe at like 10 a.m. Central Time in the morning, maybe it's different there. I don't know.
After the All-Star festivities, I can only imagine that she's loading up on coffee.
What do you think of the contenders, pretenders discussion in the American League, Jules? Because I honestly, even with people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. So, I mean, I think we all know what the Blue Jays are, generally speaking, from a competitive standpoint. We were kind of talking about this before the break. But, you know, when you look at the teams, even in wild card standings right now, like right this second, it's the Yankees wild card 1, Twins wild card 2, Red Sox wild card 3. So, I don't know. Like, the Yankees And the Orioles are in an interesting position because they're probably going to be jockeying for the American League East lead probably all for the rest of the season. Probably. Yeah. They're basically separated by like two games, something like that.
Unless something out of the ordinary happens. I think that this is, you know, baseball, right? It's the old adage of this is why we play 162. Yes. But the truth is that there's no 162 anymore and things kind of happen. But I agree with you that if everything stays the course, it seems like these two teams are going to fight until the end, which will be pretty interesting. It'll be a fun storyline to watch if that happens.
So then, if we're in agreement that the Orioles and the Yankees are actual World Series contenders, and I think they are. Like, the Yankees, I think, have generally played not so great in the last little stretch here, but they did pick it up against the Orioles right before the All-Star break, and that wild, Cedric Mullins, two-run double over the head of Alex Verdugo in left field. That's not great if you're a Yankees
not
fan.
Not great, no.
But I think we can agree they're contenders. But are teams like the Mariners, Twins, and Red Sox, all of whom are in playoff spots as we speak right now, are those teams actually contenders? And I'm not sure the answer to that question, for me, mm-hmm. I'm not sure the answer to that question is yes. And that goes back to something we talked about with Manny, which is that I almost feel like just the expanded playoff field, and right now the Mariners are leading their division, so it wouldn't really make a difference, but the expanded playoff field has effectively meant that more teams are not likely to make significant changes, even when maybe they would or should, for the betterment of their franchise long term. The Twins and Red Sox, I think, have played a lot better than people expected, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they're like going to go play in the Fall Classic here.
Yeah, I don't think so. I am a little more maybe conservative or pessimistic than Kennedy is, because I don't actually see a bunch of these teams as, you know, having an actual chance. And if they do, it will be a Cinderella story, kind of like what the D-backs were last year. But looking at the standings and looking at what we've seen on the field, the actual product, I wouldn't even put the Mariners as real contenders, to be honest with you. I think that there's a lot of holes here. They're coming into, they came into the All-Star break having lost three in a row, and you kind of see the cracks starting to show a little bit, and then the Astros all of a sudden look normal again. They look kind of like what you would expect out of the Astros. And it's funny to think that with the start to the season that the Astros had, right now I truly believe that they have a better chance than the Mariners do, and I truly believe that they have maybe more of a foundation and the ability to make a deeper postseason run than the Mariners do. And the same goes a little bit for the Cleveland Guardians.
Okay.
This is
in terms of being contenders,
in terms of actually having, right, okay, you know, would you put stock or put money into them winning the World Series?
Right.
It's been a fantastic story. They're the best team in the American League right now for a reason. There's a lot that is going right for them. You kind of see an offense that is contact oriented or maybe speed oriented, and all of a sudden they're hitting for power, and you have Josh Naylor in the middle of that. You have Stephen Kwan, you know, leading the league in batting average and kind of breaking out and then finding power as well. This is all good stuff. But
Jose Ramirez.
He's just a great guy to watch, right?
He is.
Much fun to watch. But then looking at the pitching side, you have a little bit of uncertainty, yeah. and that is going to play a factor. Their bullpen is really, really good. But you know, the bullpen does not a World Series contender make. So I will be very interested to see if this is something that the Guardians can sort of maintain in the second half. And if they do, maybe I'll change my mind and I'll come in here and I'll say something different. But right now, I don't think that we have seen enough to say that they are World Series contenders. The postseason is a different beast, show.
Yeah, it really is, because you know in the postseason things get tight. You know, the rotation is actually shortened because of, I guess, less so when you get deeper into the playoffs. But if you're talking about a wild card series or even a DS, you know, you're not using all five starters necessarily, right?
That's
because of the condensed series. So, I mean, that does make the conversation actually probably a little easier for teams like the Guardians or the Orioles that actually have good, like maybe one or two front end starters and like some question marks and rotation spots 3 through 5. But I find that conversation so interesting, because you have it just feels like, and Manny had brought this up earlier when we were looking at the standings as well, but in the National League, there's some, it's a little like, certainly the Phillies and the Braves and the Dodgers, for example, stand apart. But for the most part, after that, everyone's kind of in the same mishmash, for example, right? But the division leaders in, and I would say the next, I don't know, like six teams after the division leaders stand apart from basically everyone else. Like, to Kennedy's point, I mean, the Tigers are 47-50. The Rangers are 46-50. We know what the Blue Jays are. We know what the Angels are. We know what the Athletics are. We know what the White Sox are. But even the Rays, I mean, the Rays are 48-48. That might preclude them from selling at the deadline. But, I mean, the Rays just sold Aaron Civale. So, I mean, do they believe that there's a long postseason run in their near future? Maybe not, right? So I just think it's going to be really telling what happens going forward. And on the topic of the trade deadline, mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about what it would cost for player X or player Y or player Z. And the Royals, for example, are the next team out of a wild card spot. They're two games out. Mm-hmm. Royals recently acquiring Hunter Harvey. And the only reason I bring that up is because I kind of wonder, Jules, to wrap up this trade deadline conversation, I wonder if the Hunter Harvey, like, price, quote unquote, yes. right, in terms of...
It
was a lot, right? Like, in terms of a pretty good prospect. I think there was a competitive balance mm-hmm. pick in there as well, because regular draft picks can't be traded in Major League Baseball. Maybe that changes. Rob Manfred did say something along those lines during the All-Star break. So maybe that changes by the next CBA, but at least for now, you can't do that. So even so, competitive balance pick and a top prospect-ish. I mean, is that now the price for a pretty good reliever? And if that's the case, I do wonder if that shapes how the deadline goes for the Rays, for the Tigers, for the Rangers, and certainly for the Blue Jays, who have a lot of those guys. I mean, if Hunter Harvey gets you that, like, surely Jimmy Garcia should get you something, or surely Yusei Kikuchi should get you something more, I would think.
Yeah, I would think so, too. It's interesting because this may not be the best year to bet on a Cinderella story.
Right, right.
When you look at the deadline and it's like, okay, maybe we'll add and try to make a run and try to make something happen, but you will be paying a pretty high price for that possibility. So it's all about balance, Joe, and it's all about the strategy, not just right now, but for the years ahead. I do have a question for you before we go to break, though.
Let's do it.
You know, obviously the D-backs last year, we saw what it was. We saw what the Nationals did when they won the World Series. It mm-hmm. seems like every year you kind of have one of those teams that come out of nowhere and make a deep run. And I'm wondering, you know, looking at what we have seen in the first half, if you have any favorites for a team that could be the next D-backs.
The next Cinderella story.
Yeah.
Okay, you tell me if this is... because they got off to a good start, and then they have not played particularly well, I think, in like the last 1 month or so. You tell me if this would qualify. Would the Royals qualify if I picked the Royals?
I'd say so. Coming into this season, did we expect the Royals to be as good as they have been? I don't think so. We saw them as a possibility for that, right? But we didn't really expect them to be in the mix this much. They are one of the most interesting teams in baseball right now.
Yeah, I mean, Salvador Perez is still swinging it. Salvador Perez, I love talking about Salvador Perez because it feels like if I guarantee if you go ask like any random person, even some of our colleagues, like, how old is Salvador Perez? People will be like, Salvador Perez is like 41, uh-huh. right? Or something. And he's not. Salvador Perez, I think 34 or 35. Like, he's not, or maybe even younger than that, honestly.
I think so.
He's not that old. It's just that he has been playing in Major League Baseball. I think he made his debut at an extremely young age, which you just don't see very often anymore. And he was good more or less right away. But Perez is still swinging the bat pretty well. He can play multiple positions, first base catcher, usually catcher. You got Bobby Witt Jr. He has been phenomenal. You got players like the MJ Melendezes of the world and the Vinny Pascantinos mm-hmm. of the world. Seth Lugo has been phenomenal to watch this year. Cole Reagans is a lot of fun to watch. I mean, they have the requisite pieces, which is kind of why I kind of waffle on the idea, like, would they really be a Cinderella story? Because they have actually played so well for, like, I would say the vast majority of the season, if not the whole season. But yeah, they've taken a bit of a swoon in the standings in the last, like, you know, like, 3-4 weeks thereabouts. But I mean, as things stand right now, they're two games out of the third wild card spot. So they'd probably be my pick.
Yeah, that's a good pick. And you hit the nail on the head. He is Salvador Perez is 34.
Okay.
And he is currently in his 13th major league season.
That's wild. That's so wild. He's been
different.
Good for so long. It's crazy.
Yeah. And he's a World Series champ, right?
Yeah.
So it would be fun. It would be a nice story to see him sort of come back to that stage. I'm kind of intrigued by the Tigers as well.
Really? Okay.
Don't think they have what it takes just yet, but when you look at their record in the past month or so, like, they went into the break having won 8 of the past 10. So I don't know. It seems like they have the ability with those young guys and that team, and with AJ Hinch at the helm, who's the guy who also has, you know, some experience in the postseason, it seems like it would be I don't know. It wouldn't be completely surprising to me if they made a run for it at this point.
You want to weigh in? 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. Standard messaging and data rates do apply on the People's Text Line. But if you do choose to text us at 590-590, you can leave your name and location. We'll take your text certainly on the playoff race as things tighten down the stretch. But on the other side of the break, Jules, we will do look back and put a final bow, I think. This will probably be the last chunk of time this week we spend talking about the first half of the season, but put a bow
Thank
on the...
God,
I know.
Joe.
I think I've had enough. 96 games resulting in a 44-52 record is probably for the best.
Please,
but
let's look ahead.
Before we do that, though, we will do the wrap up with the first half awards. Biggest surprise, MVP, your best starting pitcher, best reliever, most improved, whatever you like, you want to discuss it, you can text us at 590-590, name and location. But first half awards to wrap up the first half. On the other side of the break, you're listening to Jays Talk Plus on the Sportsnet Radio Network and watching on Sportsnet 360.
Dive deep into Toronto sports and the NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Final segment of Jays Talk Plus here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, also on Sportsnet 360. Show Ali, Julia Kreutz here with you until the top of the hour. Thanks for being with us today. You can reach the show anytime, 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. It is always open for your texting pleasure. Standard messaging and data rates do apply when you do shoot us a message. But taking your text certainly on the second half and today on the first half of the season awards. And Jules, we were talking about this, I guess, over the course of the week, right? Over the course of this these last couple of days. Tomorrow, actually, we'll do second half bold predictions. So get your bold predictions ready for the last 66 games for the Toronto Blue Jays. But I have my picks for first half of the season awards here. So here are the categories, okay? We'll do them in reverse order. But okay. MVP, best starting pitcher, best reliever, most improved player, and biggest surprise, and okay. I will let everyone decide how they would like to answer those questions. I suppose, and I feel like it would be wrong for me to say you can only be a positive about this, but if you're picking biggest surprise, I suppose it could also, in theory, be a negative surprise, right?
I guess
something
so.
You did not expect.
That's a good point.
Right?
I mean, handing out awards for bad behavior. Sure, let's do that.
Like the Razzies, right? Have you ever seen the Razzies? They're like the opposite of the Oscars.
Yeah.
They're like the handing out for the worst movies or whatever. Have you seen?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched those?
I have not.
They're pretty
that
wild.
Does sound fun.
Halle Berry once actually showed up to accept a Razzie in person. So
I love that. Respect
to her for that. But if you do want to take that tact, you are certainly welcome to do so. Let's start with biggest surprise. Let's
sure.
do that. We'll end on MVP. Probably because it's a pretty short conversation for the Blue
yeah,
Jays.
Yeah, that will
but,
be, yeah.
But biggest surprise to the Toronto Blue Jays in the first half. Where does Julia Kreutz go?
Okay, so,
are you going, first of all, positive or negative? I guess I should ask.
Positive surprise. Although, in hindsight, maybe we shouldn't be that surprised. But for me, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa.
Okay,
kind of falls in that category. When the Blue Jays signed him, it kind of signified a slow trade debt or a slow offseason. It signified that the Blue Jays maybe didn't acquire the top-end talent that they were looking to add in the offseason. And then, he comes out and he's kind of like quietly the most consistent, most reliable guy in this lineup. You're not going to be overwhelmed by his power. He's a contact guy. He's a guy that, at his best, he can control the strike zone a little bit. And he's doing it. He's doing it with the defensive versatility that is the Blue Jays value a lot. He has some speed on the bases. Came into the break hitting .292. It's a guy that you didn't expect to be at the forefront or at the center or of any conversation offensively necessarily. It was Matt Chapman is gone and we need a new third baseman and here's IKF, but he has, exceeded expectations, I would say. So, and also a guy that you value in the clubhouse. You really, really, if you talk to anyone around the Blue Jays organization, players, coaches, John Schneider will certainly be one of the first people to say that IKF is a presence in that clubhouse. Really a staple of consistency and of discipline, of showing up on time and getting the work done. And he's starting to feel at home in Toronto. He's really, starting to enjoy his time. I spoke to him a little bit before the break about that. And he says, listen, when I came in, I was still maybe feeling a little bit like a Yankee. I was kind of getting to, finding my footing. It's a brand new city. It's a brand new clubhouse. And now that I'm getting more comfortable, first of all, he's built very meaningful relationships within the Blue Jays clubhouse. And that comfort level is showing up in his play. Obviously, he ended the first half on the IL. He had a little bit of a knee issue, but and the Blue Jays are not necessarily certain when he's coming back. But he has been a surprise, and he really should. Once he is back, the Blue Jays will be a better team for it, regardless of what they are trying to accomplish in the second half.
I think that's a fair assessment of what IKF has been so far this season. I mean, hand up, I did not think he was going to be one of the more valuable Blue Jays this season, and I don't think that's not to really like to speak negatively of him. I think that more is unfortunately like an indictment of basically all but of everyone else. And Vladdy, I think, has for the most part held up his end of the bargain. I think you still want a little bit more from him, but at the same time, you know, he's starting out first baseman in the All-Star game. He's the guy who's been pretty consistent outside of maybe like a couple of weeks of down stretches here. But you know, if IKF is that guy, I would definitely agree that he has been one of the bigger surprises. Always gives you a mature AB. Love watching that from him. He always gives you a great output defensively as well, which I do appreciate. And I mean, that I think you kind of knew that. Like, you kind of knew, I think he won the Gold Glove when he was with the Rangers, but prior to his Yankees career, but you weren't sure 100% what you were going to get defensively, just because he did not play full time with the Yankees, especially last year. So, you know, was that guy, the Gold Glover, still going to be there? I don't know if he's going to win a Gold Glove this year, but he is still, because it's a pretty crowded field, but he's still that guy, I think. So I'm very impressed with him. I think my biggest surprise, I'll stay positive as well, and I'll say Spencer Horwitz.
Yes.
I got to say that's the biggest surprise, because you see a guy bat over 300 in the minor leagues for effectively two straight years. I think there's always some expectation that once that guy then gets called up to the majors, there will be some kind of drop-off, right? I mean, like, just generally speaking, traditionally there has been, and there hasn't been for Spencer Horwitz, which I think is, that itself is a surprise, but he has just been so consistent in a league where consistency is so hard to find, right? I mean, I said this yesterday, but like, a guy succeeds at a 30% rate, that's phenomenal. Yeah. Like, you're giving this guy awards, right? And that's exactly what Spencer Horwitz has done. Like, Keegan mentioned this when we talked to him earlier, but we're past the point of Spencer Horwitz comes to the plate and then the pitcher on the mound says, oh, it's that guy from the minor leagues. Like, we're past that point now. It's a great point from Keegan, because he has been one of the more fun bats to watch. And if he can keep it up in the second half, I mean, he is easily going to be in the core, at least for me, going into 2025. But I think he has for sure been one of the bigger surprises of the year.
Yeah, you look at his season, I totally agree with you. You can almost kind of already dub it a successful season for him, even though there's still, you know, quite a few games left to play. We'll probably all be, you know, watching closely how the league adjusts, how he adjusts back with prospects that come in and have that type of success. That is always going to be part of the conversation. And in the same way, we saw that with Davis Schneider, who was also probably last year's biggest surprise.
For sure.
Then now he's in a little bit of a slump because of that adjustment game. But obviously Horwitz's game is very different, more contact oriented, more of, you know, controlling the strike zone. And so it's not necessarily the same conversation as we have with Schneider, but I would agree with you that, you know, we all had hopes for Spencer Horwitz, and we all kind of understood that he would be in the majors at some point. But what he has done has been nothing short of the remarkable.
Where are you going for most improved player, Jules?
Oh, okay. This is kind of a tough one.
This was a tough one for me too.
This was, this is where I was, I thought, well, maybe we don't even have to do these awards at all. However, I did land on Chad Green, who's a guy that, you know, was limited to 12 innings last year, obviously coming back from Tommy John. He's been so successful throughout his major league career. He was, you know, one of the top setup guys for the Yankees for a long time. Someone that the Blue Jays didn't really know what to expect, you know, when they signed him, because there was that recovery. He didn't pitch a whole lot. His ERA last year was over 5, and still the Blue Jays saw enough in him in that small sample size to exercise a player option. So Green has now 2 years in his contract. I think he's owed around 20, 21 million over that time.
It was a complicated contract.
It was a really complicated contract. And I'm kind of glad that the Blue Jays just made it simple for us and said, okay, we're just going to exercise the option and that's it. But, you know, that's also kind of credit to the Blue Jays here for seeing more than just the ERA or maybe just what Green showed when he came back for those 12 innings last season. And now his ERA is hovering around 2. He's not necessarily being utilized in the most effective way here, show, because, you know, so many bullpen injuries for the Blue Jays. And now all of a sudden Green is your closer. It's not really, you know, what you would want out of him necessarily. The home runs have certainly been a problem, but this is a guy that, you know, if he can stay healthy, and since he came back from the IL earlier this season, he seems to be in a good place for that. Then you kind of look at a season and you say, this is a guy that has improved, maybe not necessarily from, you know, the rest of his career and what we saw before getting to this point, but certainly from what we saw last year to this season, I had to go with Chad Green.
You know, I like that because I think there was still a question because he finished the year strong, but there was still a question after a pretty gnarly injury and not a lot of lead time in actual major league games in the 2023 major league season for him to fully, I don't want to say fully ramp up, but definitely get to the guy that was throwing gas for the Yankees a couple of years ago, for example, right? So I'm totally with you. I think Chad Green has been great. He has certainly played very well.
What did you do here?
For most improved?
Yeah.
So it's funny. I kind of like also wanted to go with Spencer Horowitz, but I don't want to go with two guys. So I ended up deciding, I went with Jimmy Garcia. And look, Jimmy Garcia, he's on the IL. He's injured. He might not be a Blue Jay past the deadline. I have largely very much enjoyed watching Jimmy Garcia, mainly because, I mean, the guy throws gas himself. He can locate pretty well. His presence, and because he's been playing so well this season, I mean, he has an ERA this season, even with the injuries and getting knocked around a little bit right before he went on the IL, he has an ERA of 2.57 as opposed to his ERA over the course of the whole season. Of course, this could change, right? But over the whole season last year, his ERA was a little over 4. So, I mean, he was okay to good, I would say, last year. He has been excellent this season. And the reason I focused on Jimmy was because, you know, his presence in the lineup, and this, the caveat with this is that it depended on Jordan Romano also being healthy. But if you had Romano as your closer and he could go out there and shut things down the ninth inning, no matter who was coming up for the opposing team, you could then effectively deploy Jimmy Garcia. And the Jays did do this, I think, to great effect when they used both of these guys in the same game. But you could effectively deploy Garcia as like the fireman effectively, or you're like, I don't know, like middle late inning closer, whatever you want to call it, when the most dangerous pockets of batters came up that wasn't the ninth inning. You know what I mean? So like batters 2, 3, 4 come up in the seventh, you deploy Jimmy Garcia to put out that fire, and then you cruise the rest of the game, you wrap up with Jordan Romano, right? I liked how they were able to do that. They are unable to do that right now because they have neither Jimmy Garcia or Jordan Romano, both injured. But year over year, role-wise and just ability-wise and certainly results-wise, I've really enjoyed watching Jimmy.
Yeah, and that segues us pretty nicely into best reliever, because I will say that's my pick.
Okay,
I mean, Jimmy Garcia has been their best reliever. It was really unfortunate that he had the elbow issue when he did. And that kind of, you know, set up sort of a cascade effect, and things just really did not go well for the Blue Jays bullpen after that. But he was the stabilizing guy, right? When he was healthy, he was very much that guy for the Blue Jays bullpen, just racking up the strikeouts. You know, there was
blowing
a point
guys
there.
Away.
There was a point there where, you know, he hadn't, every single runner he had inherited, he stranded, which is really, really impressive. And that was through a larger sample size than, say, maybe just 5 games. So a guy that was really having a career year, seemed to have figured out his stuff, physically was doing very well also, and that was certainly translating in how he was throwing. Pretty unfortunate about the injury, because I do believe he would have been an all-star even, show, if he had stayed healthy there.
Yeah, I think if he had been there, I think you could have easily seen a world where like Clay Holmes was not in the All-Star game and Jimmy Garcia was, because he did deserve it after up to a certain point, and then the injury, I think, cut that short, unfortunately. I was going to pick Chad Green for best reliever, but you know, since you went with him for most improved, you know what I'll say? When we discussed the circle of trust, my favorite term, I haven't used that with you in a while, but the circle of trust as it pertains to the bullpen, I'll say Yenesis Cabrera, because Cabrera, I think, for a long chunk of the season, he did not get off to the greatest start, but and it's kind of like, the bullpen has been so beleaguered that it's tough to pick one guy that's not Chad Green mm-hmm. or Jimmy, and Jimmy's injured, as we've discussed. But Cabrera, in 14 innings pitched, 15 appearances in those 14 innings. This goes back to June. It's been okay. His first appearance of June, essentially, because before that, he did have a bit of an up-and-down season. But beginning of June, he has allowed 5 runs, 4 of which were earned, 3 of which came in a single game, a blowout against the Orioles, I think at the Rogers Center, where everyone got touched up a little bit. So effectively, outside of one start since the beginning of, or one outing, I should say, at the beginning of June, he has allowed 1 earned run over 15 appearances, which is phenomenal, right? And so he did allow 2 runs to score that were on Kikuchi's ledger. That was on Sunday, actually, mm-hmm. when he came into that game where the bases were loaded, I think. But even so, he has been consistent enough for me to be impressed.
I mean, he deserves that award just for that scene that he caused at the trap earlier. Yes. I think it was the first series of the
year. Was it
Jose
Caballero?
That's yeah. right. Just the shoving. And
he tried to shove his glove up Caballero's nose, essentially. Yeah.
That really set the tone for the entire season, I want to say. But you're right in that, a guy that the Blue Jays traded for last year, he had been waived by the Cardinals or designated for assignment, rather, and the Blue Jays kind of nab him there, and we don't expect him to be a big leverage guy. He's just another lefty in the bullpen behind Tim Mayza. Well, Tim Mayza's not here anymore. Cabrera is, and it's really about showing up at the right time, right? Showing the Blue Jays really needed someone to step up in that pen when Cabrera did. So I'm on board for that. Yeah.
Quickly, give me your okay. Can we agree? Unless you're going really off the board here, can we agree that our MVP of the season so far is Vladimir Guerrero Jr.? All right, okay.
Yes.
Maybe you were going, going really off the board. You're going to be a little controversial, but no, I think the truth is it's a pretty easy conversation when it comes to MVP, because Vladdy has been very consistent as of late. I know people want more extra base hits, more power. You want to see him slug more, pull more. I totally get those conversations, but Vladdy has been phenomenal, I think, for most of the year. And I think a lot of people have come around to say they want to see him signed long term. So
yes.
I think that's a pretty easy and short conversation. Starting pitcher, I find really interesting because
yes, it is.
You can go a number of ways. And I'm curious where you decided to end with starting pitcher, your best starting pitcher so far in the first half.
Jose Berríos.
All right, okay.
I'll tell you why. He has thrown 119 innings, which leads this team, which is something that this team desperately needs. The Blue Jays need a guy that can pitch deep into games and give them innings with how their depth is right now, with the hole in the number 5 spot, which was still not sure if Yariel Rodriguez is the guy long term. I know that Chris Bassett has been phenomenal, and Jose Berríos kind of took a step back recently, but still, for the value that he provides, I have to go with Berríos here.
I went with Bassett. I did. I
of
admit,
course, yeah, not, that makes sense.
Not because Berríos has been bad by any means. I mean, he has struggled a little bit in the last month, 5 weeks or so, but Bassett has just been so consistent. I look for consistency for a lot of the guys, because consistency has been something the Blue Jays have lacked, I think, for much of the season. And Bassett, I mean, he doesn't always get the win, doesn't always get a lot of run support, certainly. We saw a game in which he pitched 8 innings, and the first pitch he did not throw in that ballgame was a walk-off home run by J.J. Blidé in Oakland. I remember that so vividly because it was late, and I remember thinking, come on, like, poor Bassett, right? But Bassett is phenomenal. He's been so good, and I don't know if he's going to be a Blue Jay long-term, but, I mean, he uses a million pitches. He always gives you a bit of length. Even when he struggles, he manages to grind through outings. I've just been very impressed by what we've seen from Bassett, effectively like 2 years in a row now.
And what a bounce back, too, because he struggled a little bit to start the season, and then all of a sudden he just decided that he was done struggling, and you're seeing the results. And he's a stubborn pitcher, right, Sho? Even when he is struggling, even when he does run into a little bit of trouble, he does not let up. And to your point, that is what the Blue Jays need.
On the text line, I see Al from Niagara just says, our best rentals are Jimmy Garcia and Kikuchi. Who yields more? I think it's an interesting question at the deadline. Probably Kikuchi, because he's a starter, right?
Yeah.
I think Jimmy Garcia is healthy. That could change for sure. But I mean, because any contender could use not just a starter in the rotation, but certainly relief pitching. Like you know what they say, Jules. Contenders never have enough relief pitching. So Jimmy Garcia, I think, would be a very good addition for most contenders, but Kikuchi, I'm saying, will probably, just because he's a starter and he's a left-hander.
I would agree, and health does play a factor in here, but this is going to be a fascinating one. This is a seller's market, so we'll see what the Blue Jays get, especially on the pitching side here.
Before we go, you will be on a stage tonight with Ben Shulman and Chris Black at the Comedy Bar. What are you looking forward to doing at the Comedy Bar tonight? Tell us some jokes.
Oh, I can't.
Blue Jays therapy.
Listen, I'm not the one to tell jokes here, but I am excited to just, you know, hang out with fans and have a good time. It's just a, you know, a fun time for a change. How does that sound?
Hey, enjoy it, Jules. I've done it before with Scott Belford of the Walk Off Podcast. It's a lot of fun. You'll be great, as I'm sure Ben and Chris will be as well. It's at Bloor and Ossington here in Toronto at the Comedy Bar. Thanks to Keegan. Thanks to Manny. Thanks to Kennedy. Thanks to Jen Rolnick, Amit Mann, Austin Mackey. For Julie Kreutz, I'm Joe Alley. We'll be back tomorrow with more JSTOP Plus. Talk to you later.